All right, y'all, welcome back to another episode of TKO, Technical Knockout, the Hardcore Casual MMA Podcast. We're going to recover Mateusz Gamrot versus Rafael Fiziev, talk a little bit about that card, and then talk about what's to come in these next few weeks. Let's get into it.
Man, a second straight week, second disappointment in the main event.
Yeah, I mean, it sucks, you know.
It was just getting going, too, man.
Yeah, it looked like it was starting to get a really good fight going there. The dynamic between Gamrot and Fiziev was just like how we thought it would be, that, you know, Gamrot leaves himself open to get hit. Fiziev was, you know, very explosive early. It seemed like he was kind of being a little bit more reserved for this fight, which I thought was a really good game plan from him. Because you know how Gamrot just doesn't stop. We talked about it before. So Fiziev seemed to be taking a little bit off of his shots, which I like to see. But he was still landing some good body kicks. He was still landing some good leg kicks. Gamrot, on the other hand, had a couple takedown attempts, was wearing down Fiziev, it looked like. And yeah, I don't know. It was making up to be a good fight, but it sucks that the injury cut it short. That being said, you know, it wasn't a fluke injury. Fiziev, what's it called? Gamrot was really testing Fiziev's balance and his knees with his takedown attempts and his kicks and his kick defense. And that injury came off of a blocked body kick. So, it's not like, you know, his leg just like exploded behind him. You know what I mean? It was more like, it was just starting to wear down. And, you know, it's probably, Fiziev probably had an injury coming into this fight. You know what I mean? I'm sure he wasn't 100%. So, you know, I'm not going to give all the credit to Gamrot, but, it's just unfortunate the way that it ended. You know, I wanted to see it go down like full five rounds.
Yeah, I probably would have given it to Gamrot anyway, but you know, you could see that it was a very contentious fight. I was excited. I was very excited to see how that goes. But as it is, Gamrot gets the W, and he is, you got to think, moving on to maybe a title shot in the future.
Yeah, I mean, he's working his way there. It sucks because he doesn't really have any legitimate wins like at this level. You know what I mean? Like, there's kind of asterisks and question marks around his victories. Like this one was the injury, the last one against Jalen Turner, a lot of people thought that he lost. Against Arman Tsarukyan, a lot of people thought that he lost. It's been a while since he's had, like, you know, a victory that nobody can say anything about, against Carlos Diego Ferreira.
Yeah, so I was actually just watching someone that was saying the exact same thing. They're saying that he's probably the most overrated 3-1 record in the UFC.
Yeah, I mean, the dude's been in the UFC for a while, but just as of late, it just hasn't been impressive victories, you know? And as the level goes up, it's just going to be more and more challenges for him. But that being said, he looked good in this fight, you know? I think if the fight did play out for five rounds, I really do think that Gamrot was going to get the better of him eventually if he wasn't already doing that. So, I mean, you know, you got to feel for Gamrot in a sense, because it seemed like this was going to be a legit victory, and then boom, the knee exploded, and now there's question marks, you know? So it kind of sucks, you know? It feels a little bit like Aljamain Sterling in that sense, that, you know, you're getting these wins against big names, you're getting these, you know, these victories, these Ws on a win streak, or you know, somewhat of a win streak in Gamrot's case, but there's just, like, every one of them has some kind of contention around it. Either it's a split decision, or, you know, it's a freak injury that caused your opponent to have to, you know, bow out early. Or, you know, just in general controversy. So it sucks for Gamrot, but, you know, he just got to keep doing what he's doing. You know what I mean? Just keep going out there, putting on these good performances, putting people on the back foot, using that pace, using that pressure, using that cardio and that wrestling, you know? And, I think he's a tough matchup for a lot of the division. I think he's a tough matchup for the champion, for Islam Makhachev. I think, his, like, path to victory in that fight for Islam would have to be his striking, because I think Gamrot is just a little bit, you know, not that he's too good on the ground for Islam, but he's going to test him in a lot of places that a lot of people can't. So it's going to be a very interesting matchup if that fight does get made eventually. But I don't think he's ready for that yet.
Yeah, well, I think he's going to have to have at least one fight by default, because Islam, if he gets past Oliveira again, I feel like he's going to have Volk waiting in the wings for that rematch. Yeah. So the 55-pound weight class is starting to get kind of logged up again.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we'll see what happens. It sucks because, you know, Oliveira beat everybody else in the top five. You know, he beat the guy that beat Gamrot and Dariush. He beat, you know, Poirier, Chandler, Gaethje, all these dudes. So he deserves that title shot, you know. And if he does win, then we're going to look at a trilogy. If he doesn't win, who does Islam fight next? You know what I mean?
Well, I feel like if Oliveira wins next, what we need to do is take Islam, Volk, and Oliveira, lock him in the cage,
yeah,
and just like
do a triple threat.
Yeah, right? Dude, yeah, seriously, just clear out the division, because this happens a lot at 55 though. You know, I feel like we're always talking about this because it's just such a deep division, and then you add in Volkanovski, you know, 1 foot in, 1 foot out, and the divisions it creates interest, but it also creates a lot of just logjam for guys like Gamrot, who's probably looking at 1 to 2 fights and having to stay hot for 1 to 2 fights before he can even get a shot at the title.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, for me, I feel like Volk is going to defend that belt against Ilia Topuria, and I think he's got his hands full with that matchup right now, so...
You keep saying that. I feel like we'll see. When I'm excited for that to come up, maybe Ilya's got something for him. But
yeah, I mean, we'll talk about that fight later. But so
let's go ahead and get into Bryce Mitchell. How about that, dude? He had one in the tank.
Yeah, no, I mean, Dan Ige putting on the damage on Bryce Mitchell. It was a very close fight. You know, Bryce Mitchell was wearing it. His eye was like all busted up. But Mitchell has that weaponized pace and cardio that we talked about in the preview show, and it really started to wear down Dan Ige as the fight went on. First couple of rounds, he was able to defend the takedowns. He was able to stay out of the bad positions. By the third round, he was getting melted, you know, and that's what Bryce Mitchell does to these guys. So good performance from Bryce Mitchell. Again, very close fight, but I did feel like he did enough to win it, even though I had money on Ige. It is what it is. But, yeah, I mean... I just it's tough for me to see where he goes from here, honestly, because he lost to Topuria so emphatically in his last fight. I think, you know, you might be able to give him like the Holloway matchup, might be able to give him somebody like Giga Chikadze. That'd be a good fight. You know what I mean? One of these like top 10 guys, even Arnold Allen. That'd be interesting. Yeah, I mean, there's a couple other options.
Arnold Allen.
Yeah, I think that'd be a good fight, you know. I'm sure Bryce will take it on his shoulders to, you know, beat the Brits, and he'll get real revolutionary about it. I'm sure of it. So it'd be an interesting lead up to the fight. And yeah, I mean, I like both guys' chances in that matchup. Honestly, it's been a while since Allen's fought a really grindy wrestler like that. So I think it'd be interesting to see him tested there again. He's passed that test before, but, you know, it'd be interesting to see how he does it against Mitchell, who seems to be very determined in the cage, for lack of a better term. I think that's really the best way to describe him. He knows, he's very similar to Gamrot in that sense, that regardless of what you hit him with, he's going to keep coming forward. He's going to keep putting you on the back foot, wrestling and using that pace to wear you down and drown you out, you know. So I mean, good victory for Mitchell there. Marina Rodriguez versus Michelle Waterson. That was a beatdown. They should have stopped that fight a long time ago, I think.
Yeah, good on Waterson Gomez for sticking in there, but I felt like at that point it was like a mercy killing.
Yeah, I mean, she's all heart. You can't say anything bad about her, you know.
You can tell that one of them took it more serious in the last like couple years, which, you know, at that age, you know, no one can hate on her, but I'm not sure where Michelle Waterson Gomez goes from here.
Yeah,
you know, I love seeing her still competing, because like I said, that was the MMA crush back when I was a kid. But you know, I hate that makes it harder for me to see her take that kind of punishment, and I don't know if I would want to tune in to possibly see that again if I see her on a card.
Yeah, I just, you know, I liked how she came out in the fight. She like immediately went for a takedown, which is great, because that's really her best you know, skill set at this point of her career, and that's Mariana Rodriguez's weakness. So I thought it was a great start for Michelle, but then, you know, once Marina started getting the ball rolling, it was really hard to get to stop that momentum. You know, those knees to the body were brutal, you know, just punching her in the face over and over, wearing the damage so well, or not so well, I should say. Waterson was really just, she was getting melted out there, you know. And I really feel like they could have stopped it in the first round. Maybe the referee had a bet on over 1.5, because like he stopped it right after that point. But it was just like, I don't know, it seemed a little gratuitous.
Dude, I thought they let fucking, what's his name back in there? Mr. Let Him Die, Let Him Die.
What, who? You talking about Chris Moutinho?
No. What's that ref's name? That like, I gotta figure. Idle comeback.
Jacob Montalvo?
Maybe. There's been a couple. Maybe the fact that we're named
Mario Yamasaki.
That's who it is.
If
they're breathing, let them fight.
Yeah. The one he didn't stop the Valentina fight with Priscilla Cachoeira.
That's kind of what it felt like a little bit. I was like, this is not good.
Yeah, there's been a couple examples of that, unfortunately, in these last few years.
I think the problem was that she was still standing. If it went to the ground, if she would have fell and she would have landed a couple of fights, but I think a lot of these refs they don't want to call it while the fighter's still standing, even though someone can be like clearly KO'd on their feet.
Yeah, it's just really like antiquated logic, you know. Like, and I get it because the visual is that they're still up, they're still fighting, they got their hands up, but there's just no chance. Like, it's not like Michelle's one of these fighters that has a lot of come from behind stoppages in her career. You know what I mean? She doesn't have like huge knockout power. I don't know if she's even had a stoppage in general in years, you know, whether she was winning the fight or losing the fight. So just not a very, you know, winnable fight at that moment for her. That being said, Maria Rodriguez, great performance. I'm not sure where she goes from here. Maybe fight somebody like a Tatiana Suarez or, you know, one of those type, you know, top five hopefuls at strawweight. I think that'd be very interesting. She could even fight Jessica Andrade. Fuck it. You know what I mean? Just we ball. We'll see what happens. I think that's actually a really good matchup. I think Andrade can test the wrestling of Rodriguez for sure.
And Andrade has been on such a decline for the last like couple fights that it might actually make sense now.
Yeah, I mean,
although she still got that power. I don't know if I'd want to see Michelle Waterson on the other side of that one.
Oh no, I meant for Rodriguez.
Oh yeah, that would be you're right. That would be a good matchup.
Yeah, now that I'm thinking about it though, Andrade did get finished like 3-4 times, right? So
yeah,
it kind of doesn't make sense to give. But Marina's coming off of a 1-win streak, so she could fight her way back a little bit. But
I don't know if it's so much Marina look that good if as far as just Michelle Waterson has lost a step on that one.
She for sure lost a step, but
you could tell at the end of the fight she took that, you know, really hard. You know, she was sitting there weeping and at the edge of it, which, you know, I cried after every wrestling match that I lost, so nothing. But it just seemed like she took that very, very hard. So that's why I think you and I were texting. I thought she was going to retire. I thought like when you
I hope that, she I, retires.
Huh?
I hope she does. I mean, she has nothing else to prove, you know? And it's like, you're not really competing at the highest level anymore. If you want to take these like, you know, lower level fights, by all means, but UFC doesn't really do that for people. You know what I mean? The young eat the old in this game. So I don't know. It's tough. It's tough to see where Michelle goes from here.
Well, let's talk about Mr. Brian Battle.
That was a good performance, man. I mean, you know, he kind of... Did you catch the fight? Did you see how it went down?
Was that the one that he got saved a little bit by the ref and then came back and won?
Nah, I think that... maybe that was one of the ones on the earlier prelims, but Brian Battle...
That one.
First round, he kind of let AJ Fletcher dictate the pace. He let him come forward a lot, and it seemed like he hadn't really woken up in there. Battle's been a slow starter in his career before. But it's not like he was getting washed out by any sense of, you know, any sense of the word. But Fletcher was definitely winning that first round. And then second round comes out and Battle definitely seems a bit more awake. He's landing some good body kicks, some good knees to the body, good jabs. And then eventually he goes for a takedown and he gets it. And the ground, it was just a huge gulf in the game there. Give me one second. Yeah, so that second round came out and Battle was able to get the takedown and just he seemed like leagues ahead of Fletcher on the ground, was kind of just having his way with him there until he worked his way to a rear naked choke. Really beautiful ground transitions there. I'm a huge fan of Brian Battle. I'm really excited to see how he develops in this division. He seems to be very well-rounded and have like a very good sense of, you know, how to take the fight where it needs to go for him to win. You know, against somebody that's like super powerful and explosive, like a Trayshawn Gore, he'll stay on the outside and use his kicks and length and reach. Against somebody like Fletcher, who's a little bit more compact and, you know, pressure forward kind of guy, you know, he'll take that opportunity to get a takedown and work his ground game or stay on the outside and land those leg kicks. So I really like his fight IQ and I'm excited to see how he develops here. At the stages of the UFC that he's in right now. Solid victory there for Brian Battle. Charles Jourdain versus Ricardo Ramos was a very interesting grappling matchup here. Ramos would go for takedown on Jourdain. Jourdain would go for the guillotine. Ramos would step outside and try to work the Von Flu. And it really looked like he was going to get close to doing it in that first round. In the first few minutes, he had a pretty tight one there. And eventually Jourdain was able to recover the half guard and get out of that Von Flu threat. And then they ended up in, you know, scrambling again. Ramos worked his way back to the feet, shot in again, put his head right into the guillotine again. And Jourdain locked it up this time and didn't let him pass the guard, and was able to finish that guillotine and, you know, halfway through that first round. So really solid victory there for Charles Jourdain. And now that makes it two submissions for him in the UFC, I believe. I want to say that's the second one. I know he got one against Lando Venata. Yeah, two for him in the UFC. You know, a lot of people think about him as a striker. So it's interesting to see him pull out that that ground game, you know, and particularly that guillotine, because I believe that's the only way that he's gotten the submission so far. So pretty cool to see him adding more tools to his game there. And he's a fun fighter to watch, man. Charles Jourdain is super exciting. Air Jourdain. I love the nickname too. Pretty good. Yeah, a couple other fights on this card that were really exciting, you know, on the prelims. Miles Johns and Dan Argueta had a very good fight. Miles Johns got the victory. He just seemed to be a step ahead of him. You know, the head movement from Dan Argueta was just not doing it for him. Tim Means had that victory over Andre Fialho. That was awesome. Fight the of the night bird. For show. Yeah, did you catch that?
No, I didn't. I caught about the main card. I thought you started texting me about that, and I thought you were talking about Cody Brundage finally getting a win.
Oh, no. We'll talk about that in a second.
But yeah, good for the Dirty Bird, man.
Yeah, I mean, he looked really good, dude. He looked sharp as fuck. Like, you know, Tim Means he came out in that first round pretty hot. He was landing some good leg kicks. He landed a beautiful knee on Fialho while he was coming in and, you know, turned off the lights for a split second. Fialho was, you know, diving for the legs after that. And, you know, Means looked like he had him in the palm of his hand. He was working him. Second round comes out and Fialho came back a bit. He was able to kind of get woken up from a combination that Means threw, and it looked like he went into like killer be killed mode, and he was starting to really work Means, and it looked like he could have got the finish in the second round. So it was really the tale of two fights going into the third. Then third round comes out and Means just, you know, landed a beautiful, I believe it was a straight right or a left, it might have been a 3-2. And just, you know, put Fialho on Queer Street and, you know, ended up punching him down until the referee was forced to stop it. It was a great victory for Means. Back and forth fight. Really cool to see him get a knockout at this stage in his career. And, you know, I hate to say that we told you so, but, you know, that was a pick that we were pretty confident on in the pre-fight lead up, that Tim Means would be able to turn back the clock a little bit and get that victory over Andre Fialho. So I'm really happy to see that he was able to do it. Again, another guy that, you know, if he lost that fight, he probably would have got cut. So, you know, it's not like Tim Means is going to be challenging for a belt anytime soon, but I'd like to see him get some of these, like, more fun fights at 170. Maybe give him, like, a Nico Price type or, you know, one of these guys, Randy Brown or something like that, where, you know, he can really show off some skills. Or, you know, give him an old man, you know what I mean? Let's have some fun here, you know? If Diego Sanchez was still in the UFC, I'd like to see that matchup. But yeah, let's talk about it. Cody Brundage versus Jacob Malkoon. This was such a disappointing finish for me. Like, Malkoon was dominating Cody Brundage. The wrestling, he was, you know, out wrestling him. The striking, he was doing better. And then when he got to these ground and pound positions, he was just unloading a bunch of ground and pound on him. And yes, I'll concede that a couple of the shots did look like they were behind the head. I don't think it was deliberate. I don't think it was something that he was trying to do in a lot of the scenarios, and especially in the one that ended the fight. He threw an elbow and Brundage turned his head away from it and it landed on the back of his head. That's, you know, regardless of that, Brundage did not seem that affected by these strikes. But Mark Smith, being, you know, the ref that we know him to be, I won't say too much. He saw that illegal strike land and gave Brundage an opportunity to recover and see if he can continue. And Brundage, knowing that he was getting out grappled, knowing that he's a front runner and had already lost that first opportunity to finish, saw that he was getting dominated, saw that he was getting beat up. And when the referee asked him if he could continue, eventually he said no. And, It was a load of bullshit. As soon as when the doctors are there and the ref is looking at him, he's acting like he can't pick his head up because of the elbow to the back of the head. And then once the fight gets called, he picks his head straight up. So it was
what an asshole.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. All my homies hate Cody Brundage. I can't blame him for taking the DQ victory and getting, you know, his check. But it was really slimy, you know. I would have liked to have seen him, you know, continue. Maybe they would have took a point because Mark Smith did warn Malkoon before that. If they take a point and the fight continues, I do think Malkoon gets that finish regardless. And I'm sure Brundage thought the same thing, so that's why he wanted to get out of there. But, you know, I'm not going to sit here and try to chastise the man for not wanting to fight after taking a shot to the back of the head. But, it's not even a matter of, like, toughness or anything like that. It sucks because I just feel like we were robbed of a good performance from Jacob Malkoon, and it looked like it was going to be his first finish in the UFC. So,
where does he go from here?
I mean, I'd like for them to do a rematch, but I know they're not gonna. Malkoon was supposed to be fighting, I don't remember who, but it was a different fight that they had initially lined up for him. Let me see if we can find out. Supposed to be Aliashkov Kurziev, and then it was supposed to be Robert Briszczak. So there was a couple fights it was supposed to be, and it ended up being Brundage on short notice. So I understand Brennan, you know, he came out really hot, tried to finish Malkoon in a minute or two, and he couldn't do it. So he ended up, melting. And, it just sucks. I like to see a rematch because I want to see Malkoon get that back, but I don't think they're going to make it happen, you know. I'd like to see Brennan get, I mean, honestly, I don't think he has a spot in the UFC anymore, Cody Brennan. I think they should cut him. This would have been his fourth loss in a row. You know, he was well on his way to that fourth loss before the illegal strike saved him. That being said, that just really sucked. It killed my parlay and, really just soured that fight. Muhammad Usman versus Jake Collier was a very funny matchup. You know, I love these low-level heavyweight fights. Jake Collier was fast. He had the volume. He had the boxing. And Muhammad Usman was just a bit more bigger, a bit more powerful, and was able to get it done by decision there. Second and third round, he, you know, turned it around, was able to use his wrestling and, you know, kind of wear down Collier a bit and landed some solid, you know, jabs and low kicks. Just kind of coasted his way to a decision victory. The 30-27 was absolutely asinine. There's no way that he won the first round. Same on the Bryce Mitchell fight. They gave him the first round, which was absolute dog shit. It makes no sense. But hey, listen, you know, that's what happens sometimes. The judges will give one fighter every round, even though they only won two. It is what it is, you know. That being said, it was a pretty solid fight card overall. You know, I mean, there was a lot of not controversy, but just a lot of smog that cleared up or that, stopped some of the results from being as, you know, pure as we wanted. Give me one second. I'm getting another call. All right. Yeah. So, a lot of things that, kind of muddied the waters on this fight card, the, injury in the main event, the DQ on the prelims. But, if you look in between there, there's some pretty good performances, some pretty good fights. And, I think, you know, there's a lot to take from this card, between Jourdain, Rodriguez, Mitchell's performance, Battle's performance. There's, some really, you know, exciting things to happen from these fighters. Yeah. All right. I think we'll wrap up this recap. Appreciate y'all for listening. Thank you so much. Stay tuned next week. We're going to come back and talk about Dawson versus Green. In the meantime, we're going to break down, we're going to talk about a little bit of what's to come as far as the title pictures go on some of these weight classes and where the landscape is in the UFC right now. Appreciate y'all. Take it easy.